This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. We've been talking about what does freedom mean, moving on from that, and about Donald Trump's very, very bad weekend with all his kind of crazed tweets. But there was a set of tweets last week that really got me thinking. Bruce Wilson, at Bruce Wilson, was tweeting about William S. Lind. William S. Lind is the author of a novel. It's sort of an updated, sanitized version of the Turner Diaries in which, well, I'm quoting from him, how mostly white Christian militia groups topple the federal government, carry out mass ethnic cleansing, and force black families into slavery. The war that he describes, the Civil War, begins in 2020. Lind met personally with Donald Trump in 2016, gave him his book, and talked about uniting militia groups with county sheriffs, and which takes us to the whole county sheriffs thing. And in fact, in Bruce Wilson's tweet storm, he says, Trump appears to envision mass right-wing violence against the left. 2 days ago, he told Breitbart, it's so terrible what's happening. You know, the left plays a tougher game. It's very funny. I think that the people on the right are tougher. I can tell you I have the support of the police, the support of the military, the support of the bikers for Trump. I have the tough people. But they don't play it tough until they get to a certain point, and then it would be very, very bad. So, which raises the question, and one that I'm very curious about, is, you know, how this all might play out if Donald Trump loses the election and enough people in America believe, or there's any evidence, in fact, that the election was stolen from him. On the line with us is Sheriff Richard Mack, the founder of the Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association, that's CSPOA. .org that Bruce Wilson mentioned in his, he said they're connected to Donald Trump, the board of directors of Oath Keepers Movement, oathkeepers.org, and the former sheriff of Graham County, Arizona. Sheriff Mack, welcome back to the program.
Well, thanks, Tom. Appreciate being back with you.
It's always fascinating talking to you, sir. I am, and your Twitter handle, by the way, if people want to reach you, is Sheriff Mack, M-A-C-K. Sheriff Mack, if this scenario were to play out, if Donald Trump were to lose the 2020 election, right at this moment, about half of Americans, there was just this survey published this morning suggesting that about half of Americans are starting to doubt Robert Mueller's truthfulness, and he hasn't even issued his report. This is, you know, the consequence of this unrelenting attacks on Mueller coming out of the White House, out of Fox News, out of right-wing radio. If that echo chamber, that giant right-wing echo chamber, was able to convince a lot of Americans that the election had been stolen from Donald Trump, and Donald Trump reached out and said, hey, you know, military, police, bikers, sheriffs, come surround the White House, help me, protect me, what do you think would happen?
Well, you know, when I ran for office, one of the rules was never to talk about hypotheticals. But seeing how I'm not running for office, why not? And this whole narrative began from a convicted liar that the Democrats used to hate, but now they love him because he's turned on Trump. And that's Cohen, who
Michael,
has already
Michael
been
Cohen.
Convicted of lying to Congress, who is going to prison for lying. And now we all want to take him so seriously, like everything he says is true. And yet that still ignores the hypocrisy and the violence of the left, who during the past few years have been extremely violent at Cal Berkeley when a right-wing person wanted to speak. Of course, they go and burn the buildings down and have riots in the streets, very similar to Ferguson and Baltimore and other places where it went crazy, and also ignores the words and warnings from one Hillary Clinton, who says, we will not be civil unless you agree with us and unless you're on our side and do what we say. So I think that there's rhetoric from both sides that has been extremely out of line, but I will tell you that you're speaking to the most peaceful man on the face of the planet, and that is me. I never advocated violence, even though the SPLC has lied about me and even calls me a domestic terrorist. There could be nothing further from the truth. I have never committed any act of violence, even the whole time I was a police officer, whole time I was sheriff. I absolutely abhor violence, and I abhor what's going on between the Democrats and Republicans, and they're both at fault. I really detest the comments made by President Trump regarding the news media and that there should be an investigation on them. Obama was also very anti-media in some regards and even arrested Cheryl Atkinson. And so he doesn't have a good record on that. Hillary does not have
a
good record.
So, Sheriff Beck, we're kind of wandering far afield here. My question essentially was, you know, Donald Trump seems to be of the opinion that if he doesn't get his way, essentially, that if he, you know, if he loses the election in 2020, or if he's impeached, for that matter, that he may be able to get people to come to the White House and defend him. You're saying that you would not join that crowd, from what I understand. But do you think
I would not join it.
Right. Do you think that others would? I mean, the last conversation we had was a couple of weeks ago where we found that, you know, the majority of sheriffs in the state of Washington, like four-fifths of the sheriffs in the state of Washington, many of the members of your organization, CSPOA.org, are refusing to enforce gun control laws in that state that were passed by the people of the state of Washington.
But I don't understand why you don't believe in that sort of civil disobedience. Because first of all,
I'm fine with civil disobedience, Sheriff. Well, I'm not trying to relitigate that. You know, we already had that conversation. What I'm saying is that we see sheriffs right now who are saying, "I'm not going to do what the law says." And so, you know,
they are following the law. You act like the Bill of Rights is not the supreme law of the land.
Okay. Well, if the election was stolen from Donald Trump, and to the satisfaction of the majority of Republicans, you could absolutely believe that it was stolen. What would happen?
Elections have been stolen in America before. I mean, Hayes got elected because they formed a committee and because there was one more Republican. That's the reason he won. And that's way back at the beginning of the 20th century. LBJ stole the Senate race in Texas. And these things have happened before. It does not mean that the rest of us are going to act like a bunch of lunatics and create violence. Nixon pitted the CIA against the FBI. Nixon actually made some overtures that he was going to use the military to defend his position and make sure he stayed in. And after the impeachment thing came up, he decided to do the right thing and leave. So these things are not new, and certainly Trump did not make any of this up. But, you know, speculation about that happening. I do not believe the sheriffs would rise up and defend him, although he's had some good connections with sheriffs in this country. I've been trying for 2 years to meet with Trump to, as you'll recall, issue a pardon for Sam Girard. And you even said on your show at the very end, free Sam Girard. Well, the reason he's there is because Obama administration went after people like this who should not be in prison, and prison reform should start with not having innocent people in prison, especially an Amish farmer from Kentucky.
So Donald Trump already pardoned Dwight and Steve Hammond, the guys who took over the wildlife.
I'd love to see that. They were innocent, and they were on our list. And Cox and Kettler from Kansas are also innocent, but there's so many people that are in prison that should not be in America. And I also don't believe in the drug war and putting potheads in prison, which we've done extensively, and let's face it, the drug war has been an excuse to create a police state in America, and I'm against all of that, and I have been for a long time.
Yeah,
that's why I say I am a peaceful person. I want peace in this country, and Trump needs to scale back on the rhetoric, especially aiming an investigation at any of the media. I don't care how bad. I don't like CNN, but I'll still be interviewed by CNN. I don't trust a lot of the media, but I still do not believe the president should be getting involved with that.
Yeah. So I think on a lot of issues, you know, we can. I'm pleased that you and I, Sheriff Mack, can have reasonable conversations about these things, and I'm also pleased to hear that you don't think that the members of this organization, CSPOA, would rise up if Donald Trump called them to. That's fascinating. Sheriff Richard Mack, thank you for dropping by today.
Anytime, Tom. See you soon.
Good talking with you. And you can tweet Sheriff Mack at Sheriff Mack. At Sheriff Mack. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So what do you think? I mean, seriously, is Sheriff Mack kind of downplaying this, or is he just spot on? And welcome back, Corky in Rochester, New York. Hey, Corky, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's on your mind today? Corky, you are on the air. Well, that's rare. Corky usually knows what he's doing. Let's try Jules in Whittier, California, listening to KPFK. Hey, Jules, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I'll try not to rant on this time, but I was just thinking about the Second Amendment and how they passed it in their 18th century. We're in the 21st. That's a long time, but they had, like, blunderbusses and muskets and, right, you know, this kind of stuff. And now we've got machine guns, and it's awfully vague to me, that Second Amendment, don't you think?
Well, it was passed mostly to allow the southern states to maintain their slave patrols. I mean, that was the essence
of
it.
Oh, I see.
And for the guys in the north who supported it, there were the guys who didn't think that there should be a standing army during time of peace. So, you know, it satisfied both groups.
The other thing I just want to mention was I was watching some documentary where he's talking about the President of the United States and his power, his bully pulpit. He says, you know, most of the power of the president is not really his actions so much as his words.
That's correct.
You know, he represents America. Now, if every mother and father, you know, wants to set an example, where they don't go around lying and, you know what I mean, stealing and all this. In the same way with Trump. If he's going to set an example for the entire 300 million Americans plus the global, you know, listenership, then, you know, obviously this guy's setting a bad example. I wrote the other day on Facebook about how, you know, we have the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not lie, thou shalt not, you know, kill and all that. So lying is right up there with the others in terms of veracity. You know what I mean?
Right.
I just want to bring that point across. All these Christians that are backing Trump or whatever, GOP or whatever, they're all backing this guy who's going against, you know, 2,000 years of Judeo-Christian, you know, Abrahamic religion. So I just want to bring.
Yeah,
that
but they've
across,
got this. They've know? Got this whole. This whole. He's King Cyrus. He's the Persian
yeah.
king who was. Who was a follower of Muhammad, who saved the Jews,
right.
You know, so he's a no good guy, but hey, he's helping us out,
yeah.
So you know, we'll go along with that.
Well,
and this has become you know, part of doctrine for the white evangelicals.
Yeah, L. Ron Hubbard, the guy that started Scientology, was a cult leader, I believe.
Yeah,
and he was influenced by. Yeah, he was influenced by Crowley. I think it was the Englishman. He was a black
yes.
magic.
Aleister Crowley, yes.
Aleister Crowley, yeah. And so I look at Trump as similar, is that he's really into these dark arts, you know. And when you lie in the presidency, it's one thing to lie about, oh, I made a little mistake or there. But like LBJ was doing, he was lying about the policy of the Vietnam War. And that's considered treason, you know. So I don't know how many counts against Trump it's going to take for the GOP to get out of their occult mode. But at this point, any clear-thinking third grader could see that this guy is poison. He's a cancer who needs to be removed because he's metastasizing, you know, even around the world, I would say.
Well, and that removal process is the 2020 elections if he's not impeached before that. And
oh,
I'm
yeah.
just, you know, the question in my mind is how will the hard right, particularly the armed hard right, react? Jules, thanks for the call. And I honestly don't know the answer to that question. And just the fact that I'm asking the question troubles me. We'll be back. It's 20 minutes past the hour. With you and Adam in Topanga, California. Hey, Adam, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. This is Adam. How are you doing today?
I am well. What's up?
I just disagree with the way the Second Amendment is often portrayed by sources like yours and people like the last caller from Whittier. And I feel like a lot of people that were at least formerly Democrats feel this way, if you follow the statistics about gun sales currently.
I don't understand what your point is, Adam.
Well,
why don't you be specific?
I feel like, what you're saying oftentimes is sort of hyperbolic or not well enough informed about.
It's not hyperbole that at the Virginia ratifying convention for the Constitution in 1788, Patrick Henry stood up and spoke, and James Madison was there. He was one of the delegates, and he was also arguably the author of the Constitution. And Patrick Henry's and the proposed Second Amendment, which was being proposed at the behest of Thomas Jefferson, because he did not want there to be standing armies during times of peace. And I encourage you to read the transcripts of this stuff. And the original Second Amendment said the security of a free nation. And Patrick Henry stood up and said, this is a backdoor attempt to end slavery. I'm saying this in modern English, but again, you can Google his name and my name, and you'll find articles that will link you to direct quotes. And Patrick Henry said, who was the largest slaveholder in the state of Virginia, said that what's going to happen is if this Constitution is passed with this amendment, then the President of the United States can call up any militia in any state. And when he does that, he will call up militias made up of our slaves, and he will free them. First time we get a Northerner in the White House. Now, that didn't happen for five, other than John Adams, that didn't happen for five or six presidencies. But this was Patrick Henry's fear, and he said they are going to free our slaves. And Madison was like, well, what do you want? And Patrick Henry said, change the word nation to the word state, so that Virginia can maintain its slave patrols independent of federal control. And Madison said, you are being paranoid, sir. And Patrick Henry said, I will defeat the Constitution of the United States. We will not vote for ratification here in Virginia if you do not make this change so we can maintain our slave patrols. And Madison made the change. It's not in dispute, Adam. You can read it.
Can I say something?
You're welcome to say something.
Your show. I know all of that information. You spoke to me as though I don't. I am an African-American. I'm very well aware of the very formation of the Second Amendment, and that people like me were not allowed to have firearms at the very formation of this country. There are a lot of things that were wrong with the formation of this country that I could speak on endlessly, and we can have that conversation later. But what we're talking about is how currently the Second Amendment is hyperbolic. And what you just did expresses that perfectly in my mind, because I'm not really debating where it came from. What I'm debating is when I was born, in the 80s, dating myself, but when you were born with a certain understanding of what the Second Amendment was. And we don't have to argue that the Second Amendment has been one of the most contested, if not the most contested, political issue in American history.
Oh, up until the mid-70s, the NRA was calling for gun control.
Yeah, I know, which is why I'm not a supporter of the NRA. They are the leading proponent of gun control in this country.
Well, not since the 70s.
All right. We're getting a bump stock ban right now due to the NRA's influence. They are still
a bump stock is not a gun.
Great. It's an accessory. Right. And what's happening is that is going to be a backdoor.
So, Adam, you're of the opinion that there should not be any regulations on guns?
No, not at all. What I am of the opinion of, though, is if we are going to have a Second Amendment that has a certain sort of clarification, does go to these Supreme Court battles in which this clarification is, put this way every 10 years, then we should really spell it out, and people like me and you should actually have an understanding of what its current meaning is. And this is what both of our sides are often arguing.
I still don't know what your side is, Adam. You keep critiquing my critique, but not, and we're running out of time here. I mean, we're...
Okay, I'll try to, I'm sorry.
We got 1 minute. Before we hit a hard break.
Exactly what I'm saying. Every year, new gun laws come on the book, and they're supposed to make us safer, yet that never realistically happens.
Well, that's not true. What we know is that the states that have the fewest guns per capita have the lowest rates of homicide and suicide involving guns.
All right.
More guns, more deaths. It's real simple.
Places like Chicago.
Chicago is geographically part of northern Indiana. The vast majority, more than 50% of the guns confiscated in Chicago came from northern Indiana. You can drive from northern Indiana into Chicago in less than 5 minutes.
Purchased legally, so you're talking about a crime that was already committed, that there was already a law to protect against, correct?
I don't know what you're saying.
So all the guns that are in these crimes are committed.
Adam, if Chicago is the example that pro-gun people always pull out. But if you look at a city like New York City that is surrounded by other cities that have gun control, you don't have that level of gun crime in New York City because you can't drive 5 minutes away and buy a gun. you have to drive at least an hour or two away from New York City to get a gun. So New York City doesn't have that problem Chicago has. That's a BS excuse or reason or whatever. Adam, call another time and let's have this conversation and let's try to get right to the point the next time. We'll be back. It's coming up on 28 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
Fair and only slightly unbalanced. Tom Hartman here with you. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And boy, what an interesting day. And Sheriff Mack adding to all that. It's quite remarkable. The George Conway continues stoking the fires, by the way. This is Kellyanne Conway's husband. He tweeted out the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of the American Psychiatric Association's diagnostic criteria for narcissistic personality disorder. And grandiose sense of self-importance, preoccupied with fantasies of unlimited success, power, brilliance, beauty, and love, believes that he or she is special and unique and can only be understood by other special, unique, high-status persons, requires excessive admiration, has a sense of entitlement, interpersonally exploitative, takes advantage of others to achieve his or her ends, lacks empathy, unwilling to recognize the feelings and needs of others, envious of others or believes that others are envious of him or her, and shows arrogant, haughty behaviors or attitudes. It's George Conway tweeting out Donald Trump's resume. It's incredible. Tom in Woodinville, Washington. Hey, Tom, what's on your mind?
This is Paul. Sorry.
Paul.
Yes.
Hey, Paul. How are you? I was wondering why Tom in Woodinville was calling.
No.
What's up?
Well, clearly that doesn't apply to Trump because he can only be understood by people with a substandard intelligence. So.
It seems.
Sorry, that might have been a little too subtle.
Yes.
Well, Sheriff Mack really didn't answer your question about what will happen if Donald Trump were to not win the election. He didn't win the first time, but let me point something out here. And I thought it was only here in the state of Washington, but then I heard Amy Goodman talking about it. There are law enforcement officials across the country, not just here, who are refusing to uphold laws. For
yes.
instance, in here in the
laws.
State of Washington... in November, we passed a Citizens Initiative 1639, which is a wide-sweeping gun reform initiative passed by 60% of the voters, an initiative. And the sheriff of Republic County, Washington, says he will not uphold 1639.
Right, and specifically what it's requiring is that he be the guy who executes the background checks.
Yeah, well, he just come out and said, he says... And he does this, he says, first of all, it's unconstitutional. So he's going to become an appeals court justice.
Right.
The initiative was already tested in a Seattle district court, and then it was appealed to the Seattle Supreme, that's what they call it, the Seattle Supreme Court, the Washington Supreme Court that refused to hear the case.
Right.
Presumably because they would have come up with the same result.
Right.
As the
yeah,
you know,
they let
court.
The lower court stand. Yeah,
right. So there, but now there he's saying that it's unconstitutional. Clearly, Section 18 of the okay. So they
but there's Tom or Paul. Excuse me. There's a big difference between willfully, between basically refusing to act, which is what these sheriffs are doing, and acting. You know, in other words, getting on an airplane and going to Washington D.C. And taking your guns out of checked luggage and reassembling them and showing up, surrounding the White House to protect Donald Trump. That's a long stretch from saying, you know, I'm not going to do what I wasn't doing before simply because the law changed and says I have to do it now.
Well, I don't know, because I would use the argument that refusing to decide is a decision in and of itself. So
no, I get that, but
act is an action, and that's what he also has said. I'm sworn to uphold. Here's the two things that are contradictory. He says, I'm sworn to uphold the Constitution of the state of Washington. At the same time, he'll turn around and say, I was voted to protect the people of the county republic.
Right.
So on the one hand, he'll use the statewide argument. At the other hand, he'll say he's only bound to the his constituents. So I think we're going to see, whether Trump wins or not, these pockets of I don't know, I don't want to call them pockets of resistance, but let me tell you just quickly. In 2008, when Barack Obama won the election, I had gone to North Carolina to visit a friend of mine and was having dinner with his sister and her husband, who lived on the other, just over the border in South Carolina, in a small town, a small voting district. She's a bartender in one of the two bars there, and the talk around town was that there are two N-word lovers who voted for that monkey. I wonder who they are.
Wow.
And that's what she had to listen to in her bartending job. Who are the two N-word lovers who, because there were two votes for Obama in this precinct?
No, I opened my new book, The Hidden History of Guns and the Second Amendment, with the story of being in Mason, Michigan, at a gun range, with two of my brothers and a couple of our kids on the Christmas weekend of 2008, when Obama won the election, and we went in to rent some ammunition, to rent some guns too. Steve brought his own gun with him, but none of the rest of us own guns. And they were perfectly willing to rent me the guns, and I tried to buy two boxes or three boxes of ammo, and he would only sell me either one or two. I don't remember which it was. I'm pretty sure it was two. And the shelves were like three quarters empty. And I've been in that shooting range a lot of times over the last 30, 40 years. And I've never seen them, anything other than stock like a Walmart. And I'm like, why can't I buy more ammunition? And he's, we're going to be here a couple hours. And he's like, because of that N-word in the White House. And he goes off on this rant, or who is going to be in the White House, who just got elected. And he just goes off on this rant. And in fact, I wrote in my book, I wrote it using that word, or, with asterisks and things. And my publisher said, no, take that out. And so I changed it to that.
Even though no laws have changed in the meantime.
But that was the same thing. I mean,
complete non sequitur.
Yeah.
But I have to say, just to wrap it up here, when you're talking with other callers about shooting, I always think, what is the fascination with this? It's like shooting nails out of a nail. I don't get it, Tom. You know what? Learn to play the piano, for crying out loud. Learn to do something that people might enjoy. No one enjoys watching somebody shoot a gun at a target or at anything, frankly. I don't get it. I just don't get it. I fired a gun a few times in my life. Never wanted to do it again. Just yuck. Too loud. Too. Blah.
Well, I think
I'm going to go practice, Tom.
I think a lot of us grew up thinking that it would be really fun to be, based on the television and movies that we saw, that it would really be fun to be, the good guy with a gun. And I think that's just like cooked into a lot of men. And I confess,
being a good piano player
too.
At a party. It's way more interesting.
Well, I get it. Paul, thanks a lot for the call. It's good to hear from you. Richard in Athens, Tennessee. Hey, Richard, what's up?
Hey, good morning or good afternoon. I'm not exactly for sure. I was just listening to one of the previous callers while I was flipping through the channels, and he was kind of making disparaging remarks about what the media calls evangelical Christians, which I guess you would put me in that category, and how we could vote for President Trump. And I guess I wanted to clarify and make it easier for people to understand that maybe most of us didn't start out voting for or supporting President Trump. But as a process of elimination, he ended up being the nominee. But be that as it may, he is a loud, rude, crude, socially unacceptable, boisterous, fill in the blank. He's the messenger.
But
I like the message.
And what's the message that you like?
The message is conservative judges, less taxes, securing the border. Those things mean a lot. Bringing jobs back to America.
And you actually think he's doing any of these things, Richard? I mean, he has probably raised your taxes if you're making under $150,000 a year. He has done absolutely nothing on the border.
I just feel my taxes out, and I saved about $1,000.
Okay, well, you must be in a... That's good. I'm glad to hear that you saved $1,000.
I'm a factory worker, and my wife is a school teacher, and so we make about 100 and $30,000.
Yeah, so you're doing okay, and it doesn't trouble you that the potholes are getting worse and that the schools are falling apart and that Donald Trump's first major piece of legislation was to allow coal companies to dump more poison into the water, into the rivers that are supplying our water.
When I go turn the lights on, Tom, I don't care where the energy comes from. I want it to be.
No, I'm talking about when you turn your water on, it's got poison in it now because Trump is dialing back on environmental regulations.
Well, let's be clear. We all want clean water and we all want clean air.
No, I'm sorry. The people who are running the EPA right now, they would much rather have profits for the big polluting industries who own them. The Republican Party is wholly, this is something, Richard, you got to figure out. And it's probably going to take a while, but the Republican Party is wholly owned by the billionaire class and the big corporations in this country. And they will throw you a crumb. They will throw you a bone and tell you that they're going to let your preachers maintain their tax-exempt status so people like Jerry Falwell can continue to be multimillionaires off the suckers who are sending them money every week. But they are not going to protect your air or your water or your food or your drugs.
You understand? When you talk over people, they're not able to express their views. And I know I'm somebody that you really don't enjoy talking to because I'm not even in your people group, I'm going to say, but I don't agree with everything that the Republicans do either. You still there?
Yeah, I am, but we're hitting a break here. This is a hard break. I don't have any control over it.
All right.
Richard,
thank you for that.
Yeah, give me a shot some other time. We'll continue the conversation. Thank you very much for a thoughtful and respectful conversation. We'll be back. It's 45 minutes past the hour. Stick around.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
We'll be back. We're going to check in with Talk Media News here in about 4 minutes. We'll stick around. And welcome back. Travis in El Dorado, Illinois. Hey, Travis, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. I just had a quick comment about, what was it, Sheriff Mack? Is that what his name was?
Yeah.
I agreed with the vast majority of the things that he said. I just found it to be, a little hypocritical on his part to say that he sees what Trump is doing as putting us more towards a police state, but then he agrees with the police in Washington not enforcing the laws of that state.
Right.
I don't understand how he can rationally, you know,
Richard Mack is, he's been a guest on this program for years, and he is a complex person in some regards, and he's a smart man, and he's not here. I'm uncomfortable talking about people who aren't here to defend themselves.
Yeah.
So what'd you want to say about what he had to say, Travis, or did you just say it?
I liked the fact that he supports many of what we believe as, you know, left-wing progressive viewpoints. You know, war on drugs is a joke because it's really never amounted to anything. It's really never, you know, solved any issues. It's just a huge money grab by the, you know, by the right. But to the point, I didn't understand his comments surrounding, you know, let's not make this a police state, but at the same time, not have the police in Washington State.
Yeah, and other states as well, as Paul was pointing out.
In Washington State.
Yeah, yeah. No, I get it. I get it. Travis, thank you very much. Felicia in Pilot Hill, California, watching Free Speech TV. Hey, Felicia, what's up?
Hello. I just want to say that after hearing about the Trump Breitbart interview,
mm-hmm.
I want to let people know that the most important thing we can do between now and the election is to remind people on a regular basis that united we stand, divided we will fall. And that if we are foolish enough to allow anyone, be it a dictatorial egomaniac or jihadist terrorist, to divide us to the point that we take up arms against one another, we will fall,
yeah.
and the American dream will die.
Well, we went through that in the 1860s, and it was an extraordinarily painful and difficult experience for the country, and we nearly didn't make it through. And I think one of the few reasons that we did make it through is that we had a genius in the White House, Abraham Lincoln. I can't say that that's true right now.
Very true.
You know,
it is,
and that concerns me. And therefore, I think that your analysis, Felicia, is more accurate for this moment in time than it would have been in the 1860s. You know, if we reach the point where we're taking up arms against each other, it's going to get really bad, really fast. And you know, God only knows where it's going to go, especially with the leadership that we have right now. Whew. Felicia, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for the call. It's good to hear from you, and thank you for watching Free Speech TV. We're going to check in with Talk Media News here. Bob Ney will be with us in just a moment, so stick around. Talkmedianews.org is the website. Stick around. We'll be right back. Or .com, I guess it is. Maybe they're both. We'll be right back. And welcome back. Let's check in with Talk Media News and find out what's going on in the world today. This report brought to you by Goats for the Old Goat.com. On the line with us is the author of Sideswipe, former Ohio Congressman Bob Ney. Congressman, welcome back.
Well, hello, Tom. How are you?
I am great, but I'll get better.
Okay.
What's at the top of your hit parade here, Bob, in regards to the news?
Well, there's so many things going on, but I think a huge story that I'm trying to surf out some more details, and it's going to be a mixed bag of how they're actually going to carry this out. But HHS, Health and Human Services, they're surging ahead on Medicaid work requirements.
Mm-hmm.
And I brought this story up also, not just because of my home state of Ohio, which is now asking to be able to do this. And
yeah.
it would, you know, basically take it and take Medicaid and make it resemble closer to what we used to call the welfare program in
right.
some of the rules.
And this is happening. This has happened in 8 Republican states, 3 of whom have already implemented
yes.
this.
Yes, they have.
Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead, Tom.
No, I was just going to say they're kicking tens of thousands of people off their rolls every single month.
Well, yes, and what's weird about it is this. When I say weird, Ohio expects to lose 18,000 people, right? In Arkansas, guess how many people were lost when it began its program?
18,000.
18,000 people.
Right.
How do you match, and look at the population, but how do you match 18,000 people? And when I looked at that, I dug into the Arkansas, you know, program, and here's one of the catches to it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, you know, human examples we could use, but just in a generic deal here, what they do is that they document the work activities of 69,000 some people. This is in Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
And that it makes a new website of basically red tape. So it's not enough that you have a job in Arkansas. And this will apply to Ohio. Maybe a few different changes, but it'll apply, you know, generically.
Right.
So it's not enough, Tom, to simply have a job. The beneficiaries have to report their work habits monthly through an online portal that's set up by the Department of Health and Human Services, which can be federal, and you're operating in a state if you see where that's going, okay?
Yeah.
Reporting by mail or telephone is not going to be allowed. Now, the website may be... This is actually what happened in Arkansas. The website may be unavailable for up to 10 hours every day.
Right.
With no explanation particularly of why, except, you know, technical glitches, et cetera.
Right.
Okay. Then any job that you have a change of income, say you get a raise for 20 cents an hour, you know,
mm-hmm.
and you're working and you're one of the working poor, then you have to report that to the Department of Health and Human Services. And then cash income, if you wait at a table, if you mowed a lawn, that has to be rigorously, under the law, reported. Here's the other thing. If you miss a reporting requirement for 3 months in a row, not every day, but one time, for any 3 months, you're automatically kicked off of the system completely, medicine, et cetera, until the next year.
Wow. And this Medicaid program, this is the program that was put into place to provide health care for low-income working people, by and large.
Working. Correct. Working people. And so the end result of this is going to be 18,000 off in Arkansas, anticipated 18,000 before beginning.
Bob, I have a question. You know, you used to be a Republican. You were a Republican member of the House of Representatives for years. You know these guys. You swim in these waters. You got reelected as a Republican. Why is it the Republicans don't want people to have health care?
That part I simply don't understand. In Ohio, we moved in a Republican Senate and the Democratic House under a speaker named Bernd Reif. He's a very powerful speaker in his day. And we moved with Governor Voinovich, who later became Senator Voinovich, to get a health care program that didn't allow you to kick people out for pre-existing conditions. 1992.
Wow.
But Tom...
That's when you were a state legislator.
Yes, I carried the bill, Wayne Jones, in the House. He was a Democrat and Republican. The House, it went through. In the Senate, I practically, in a facetious way, had to have a political gun. And the way I got it through was to tell them that Harris Walford was hiring James Carville in Pennsylvania, and that the Democratic side would surely bring him into Ohio, and you're going to get public-funded health care right now, and if you don't like that, you better do this.
Huh.
And that's the only way we got
it. So you sold it to them as being inevitable, but again, why do they oppose it? Why do Republicans oppose the idea of low-income Americans having access to a doctor? I get it that the Koch brothers call that freedom, you know? I get that,
right.
That they think that anything that the government does is socialism and therefore should never happen. You know, is it that purely ideological? Or is it that what the Koch brothers want, the Koch brothers get?
I think it's a combination of both. And here was the point that the Republicans just don't get. They didn't get then, they don't get now. These are, if they don't like, quote, welfare, these are working people. Do you want to throw them?
And a lot of them are call themselves Republicans. I'd say probably the majority of them.
Sure. And then the other thing I told them, and they've been told by many people, they will vote for budgets that eventually provide human services. That's great. But yet they won't vote for something that helps people who are on the edge, who are, you know, trying to carry some kind of income. They won't do it. Tom, I think it's a combination of both. I used to think it was just the insurance company pool, but I don't. I think it's philosophical and... you know, advocacy groups like, the push of the Koch brothers, et cetera.
So you used to think that the Republicans were taking this position because they basically wanted to force people to buy health insurance, even if they couldn't afford it, and the insurance companies had bought off the Republican politicians.
That's what I used to think, but I think it's a pieces of everything. It just doesn't make sense, especially, you know, in like this system here with Medicaid. They will fall off, and guess what you will do? They're going to put them on human services, right?
Well, perhaps. Maybe, I mean, some of them are going to probably die. You know, they're going to ignore that pain that turns out to be cancer.
Now, here's the other thing about these requirements that the Trump administration is pushing. They're trying to, you know, get around the court system. They're pushing them. I'm sorry, we're running out of time, but they're going to try it through the, you know, just through doing it and try to fight the court system.
Amazing, amazing. Bob Ney with Talk Media News, author of Sideswiped. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you.
Always good talking with you. We'll be back. Stick around. It's going to get interesting here. We're going to be talking with Wajahat Ali.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.